Spirit Blade Underground episode 497. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at ChristianGeekCentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out SpiritBlade.com. On the show today, a review of the movie A Wrinkle in Time, a look at some new sci-fi and fantasy novels found on the Christian Geek radar, and some thoughts about crappy job situations as we continue in the book of Ephesians. All right, here we go. A Wrinkle in Time. Now, I have not read the book that this was based on. I gave it a try back in junior high, found it to be too dry and, I guess, not character-driven enough, and, you know, just kind of all about concepts rather than characters. I tend to gravitate more towards stories that have to do with characters rather than concepts. So, let me give you my thoughts on what this movie was to me. The synopsis on IMDb reads, following the discovery of a new form of space travel, as well as Meg's father's disappearance, she, her brother, and her friend must join three magical beings, Mrs. What's-It, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Which, to travel across the universe to rescue him from a terrible evil. All right, so if there's a spectrum of movies where you've got, like, kid movie, and then transition to family movie, and then you transition to adult movie, this one felt mostly like a kid's movie. I was hoping it would be more of like a family movie type thing, and maybe that is kind of what they were going for. I'm not sure, but to me, it felt largely like a kid's movie. You know, that's the adventure in this movie is largely based around a sense of wondrous spectacle, not a real sense of peril, I don't think. At least I didn't feel real peril. I think maybe in the back half or the final third, they're definitely going for peril. But by that point, I don't know, maybe just because of, you know, in a meta sense, because of the PG rating, I was like, nothing really bad. So we're not going to see any blood. You know? So, although for young kids, I would imagine it will feel exciting enough. But for me, I was largely bored. The kids are also written as older than they are, which I think is another kind of indication that this is for kids, rather than a movie that's for adults, where kids are often written to be more like kids actually are, you know, rather than kind of empowering them. I think that's kind of what happens in a kid's movie is kids want to feel empowered when they're watching kids in movies, you know, so they empower the kids, they make them smarter, more capable. And the fact that they were smarter and more capable in this movie was explained a bit by the unusual brilliance of two of them, because they are the son and daughter of this really brilliant couple. But that intelligence aside, and with the other kid that was with them, they still behave and talk in what felt like very scripty kind of ways, if that makes sense, or romanticized ways that might appeal to kids again, but I don't think realistically represent kids. There were a few moments of drama that moved me, though. Any scene Chris Pine was in felt more grounded and real to me. I think that's both because of the script in those moments and how long they spent on certain things, certain emotional beats, and also because of the actors' performances. Chris Pine plays the father, and I thought he did a great job of reminding me of some very relatable emotional realities in the midst of very unrelatable circumstances and psychological behaviors in the rest of the movie. Let's see here. Now, I have to confess regarding just my thoughts on the casting in this movie. There's some bias on my part going in. I think Oprah Winfrey can do some fine acting. I've definitely seen that in her before. But a number of her philosophical views regarding spiritual matters, which she used her talk show to perpetuate for years, are broken and actually harmful. And since her character in this movie was also a mouthpiece for expressing some of those same views, the real world kind of intruded a bit in ways that didn't help my viewing experience. That doesn't always happen with me, you know. I mean, there's some actors that, you know, have, like, they're crazy outspoken and have, you know, beliefs that I would, like, have major concerns about, like, say, Tom Cruise. But for some reason, when I'm watching a Tom Cruise movie, I don't know. I'm not thinking about his belief in, you know, Scientology. But for some reason, Oprah Winfrey, at least in this movie, was bringing some baggage with her for me. I'm also not a fan of Mindy Kaling, if that's how you pronounce her last name. As an actress, I should specify, her performances to me in the few things that I've seen her in, I haven't seen her in much, just like maybe The Office and one other show, one or two other things. But, you know, in the few things I have seen her in, her performances read to me as one-dimensional, and I didn't see a change of course here. She was just kind of a smiling mouthpiece for a bunch of quotes, largely, in this movie, and I'll comment on that a little bit later. As far as stunts and visuals, I'm going to say almost nothing about them. Lots of CG that looks like CG. I think it's, especially for a kid's movie, that's not going to be a problem. All right, let's talk about relevance. Is there anything of moral, philosophical, or spiritual significance going on here that might trigger worthwhile thought or conversation? I think there's a good shot of that. It certainly triggered some thoughts in my mind. Despite being a movie that largely seems meant for kids, it also seems like it's wanting to say a number of things, philosophically speaking, that would go over kids' heads, I think. Familiar pop spiritual phrases and ideas repeatedly show up in this movie, such as, have faith in who you are. You know, that's a solution. You gotta, like, just go to it, girl, and have faith in who you are. You are a part of the universe. Becoming one with the universe is kind of an ideal presented briefly in this movie. But none of these ideas are really examined or subjected to any questioning in the story. They aren't even explained in any detail. And that's, you know, I don't know of any movie that really does explain these slogans and, you know, phrases in detail. In fact, annoyingly to me, one character's dialogue, as I mentioned before, Mindy Kaling's character, is made up almost entirely of quotes from famous people throughout history, taken out of context with no clear explanation of how they apply to the current scene. I think you can infer, you know, from context, but it's still just one more example of, we're just going to throw some things out there and we're not going to explain specifically what we mean as writers by using this phrase here, you know. I think this approach to expressing belief is largely done, this is a speculation on my part, but I think it's largely done because it conveniently dodges a need to defend anything. If you don't clearly state your position on an issue, then you don't have to potentially defend your position. But I would love for movies like this to better explain and defend these slogans that they use. I mean, what does it mean to have faith in who I am? If I'm a selfish jerk, should everyone just have faith in who they are? I don't know. What does it mean to be a part of the universe? And why would I want to become one with the universe? I mean, I just watched Annihilation not long ago, and becoming one with the universe didn't look so good in that movie. It looked horrific. But these phrases and slogans are almost never examined when presented in entertainment. They just sound kind of nice. They sound, on the surface, maybe profound, because we don't know what they're quite getting at, and so we assume there's something deep and well and thoroughly thought out behind this surface quote. But once we press them for clarity or examine their assumptions and implications, at that point they just fall apart. Evil gets an interesting treatment in this movie. As in a number of other fantasy stories that I've read or seen, evil is personified. It's a giant it. In this movie, evil is called evil, and it's an it. And it's also revealed later in passing to be the most evil mind in the universe. So it is a person, a literal person in this movie. And worth noting, it is external to humans. It's not coming from them, but externally it's manipulating and victimizing them. Now, this approach has, you know, some metaphoric value, but we should readily acknowledge that we are evil at times, and we ultimately choose the evil we take part in. We are responsible for the evil we do. Now, we may be victims of the evil of others, but we are not merely victims of evil. We are perpetrators as well. And so we need a cure that is external to us, something that is pure and reliable and that cannot be, that cannot fail, that can then change who we are. But in this movie, people are the supposed cure to evil. People who, you know, as we know in real life, are the perpetrators of evil itself. But for some reason, there's people are supposed to be able to cure and destroy and defeat evil in this movie. In this movie, we are the warriors capable of defeating evil. There is no single personified representation of ultimate good in this movie. Ultimate evil is personified, or evil in general, and all the evil in the universe is this one being that's external to us, and we're just kind of its victims. But there's no personification of ultimate good. Ultimate good is nowhere to be found compared to this clear presentation of a singular personified evil. Biblically speaking, evil is not actually a quote-unquote thing, and it's certainly not a person. Evil is a diversion from that which is good. It's a twisting of that which is pure. It's a falling short of perfection. The Hebrew word for sin means to miss the mark. Evil and sin are not these things. They're not entities, strictly speaking. They're conditions created by choice. But even human faults in this movie are not only excused, but kind of propped up as good in some way. It's really weird to me. The key to victory in the climax of this movie is the hero's recognition of her own faults. But in the aftermath, a mouthpiece of wisdom calls those faults beautiful. Beautiful. Oh, your beautiful faults. I'm like, what? What do you mean by that? At the same time, in a touching moment near the end, the father apologizes for something he had done that caused others a lot of pain for a long time. Was that fault of his beautiful too? Another point of inconsistent messaging comes when a character tells our hero, it's okay to be afraid of the answers, but we can't avoid them. Now, this was actually a great truth that we all need to apply. First, of course, I'd love the writers responsible for the empty spiritual slogans in this movie to ask some hard questions of the ideas propped up here and not avoid the unpleasant answers to those hard questions. But we as Christians need to ask ourselves the same questions about our own slogans and phrases and about their assumptions and implications. We all need to be prepared to examine and re-examine those doctrines we've embraced and see if they couldn't be improved through either scary thought, abandonment, or at the very least, refinement. I believe that if we haven't changed our minds or gained a more nuanced understanding of something we believe in the last few years, I think there's a good chance we aren't asking ourselves hard enough questions or certainly pursuing deeper understanding. Let me say that again. I know that there's probably some that will disagree, but if we haven't changed our minds or gained a more nuanced understanding of something we believe in the last few years, I think there's a good chance we aren't asking ourselves hard enough questions. One moment that will serve as a positive takeaway for me is when the father apologizes to his daughter for creating the experiment that separated him from his family for 4 years. He said, and this brought tears to my eyes, he said, I wanted to shake the universe's hand, and I should have been holding yours. And that hit me really hard. As a dad who works for himself and has a lot of control over when I work and how much I work, moments like these are convicting reminders that my ambition is not worth missing out on my kids growing up. And I think this doesn't just apply to people who work for themselves, because ultimately we all choose what job we have, you know, unless that we are absolutely at the end of our rope and we have no other choices. I think most of us are in a position where we could choose to take a crappier job if that will allow us to spend more time with our families if we really need to, you know. And so I think that that choice is present for us much more often than we're willing to face it, you know. And again, certainly for me and other parents like me who have a lot more control over how often they work, when they work, things like that, I think this could be a really good just reminder to us. These are precious years for me. I have two young boys, and I don't want to miss them growing up. it's great timing for me as we head into spring break this coming week in our home, and I'll have some choices to make next week about how to spend my time while my boys are around the house more often. All right, well, I have no idea what your tastes are in movies, but if I were a time traveler, I would go back in time and say, Peter, hey, skip this one. This is not your kind of movie. Too much of a kid's movie with a slow pace, little sense of danger, and empty philosophy. There are a couple moments that will be tearjerkers for you, but, you know, instead, I mean, those moments being so brief, just look for that Folgers commercial where Peter comes home for Christmas on YouTube, and then remind yourself to carve out some time for your boys this week. That'll save you both time and money. All right, it's rated PG for thematic elements and some peril. I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, POSTOS, Helix Reviews, and the Retro Rewind podcast. For more information about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Scanning for Christian Geeks. Subject located. Verifying status. Christian Geek status verified. Begin data transmission.
Your Christian Geek Radar covering the month of February 2018. There's not a whole lot of news that I found in 2018. There was some big news for me, and that's what I'm going to start with. For those of you who don't know, Christian Geek Central has a kind of a parent entity called Spirit Blade Productions, and that website is over at spiritblade.com. And Spirit Blade Productions focuses broadly on equipping, encouraging, and inspiring Christian geeks to live increasingly for Christ. And so an outgrowth of that has been Christian Geek Central and the content and community there. But initially, and continuing up to this point, Spirit Blade Productions has largely been about producing audio entertainment. And just about a little over a week ago, I announced a new series that we're going to be starting called the Storyteller Series, which is basically going to be an audio Bible for geeks. It's going to have wider appeal than just for geeks, but it specifically has geeks and the geek aesthetic in mind in terms of, you know, if you're a fan of big cinematic, you know, special effects, action, sci-fi, fantasy type experiences, then this is an audio Bible that's going to be produced in that fashion. For just a little bit more information, I'll actually cut away to me from a little over a week ago to give you just a little bit more information. Let me give you a little sample of it, and then I'll share some more details afterward. Hey, you want to hear a story? Okay, here's a good one. From 1 Samuel chapter 17. He took his staff in his hand and chose 5 smooth stones out of the brook and put them in his shepherd's pouch. Then, with his sling in his hand, he approached the Hapelashti. And the Hapelashti moved forward and approached David with his shield-bearer in front of him. When the Hapelashti looked and saw David, he despised him, because he was just a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. And the Hapelashti said to David,
"Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?"
And the Hapelashti cursed David by his gods. The Hapelashti said to David,
"Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field."
Then David said to the Hapelashti, "You come to me with a sword and a spear and a javelin? I come to you in the name of Yahweh of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. On this day, Yahweh will deliver you into my hand. I will strike you down and cut off your head. I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Pelashtim this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, so that all the world may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all those gathered here may know that Yahweh saves not with sword and spear, for the battle is Yahweh's, and he will give you into our hands." And the
Pelashti rose and came and drew near to meet David. David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the HaPelashti. And David put his hand in his bag, took out a stone, and slung it.
Now, that's work-in-progress material. Some things like the music or other elements may change or be redone. I'm not sure yet. But that sample, I think, gives an idea of what I've been working on, what I'm creating, essentially. And it's called the Storyteller Series. The Storyteller Series will be a straight, line-by-line audio adaptation of entire books of the Bible. Stylistically, it lands somewhere between an audiobook and an audio drama. It will be like an audiobook in that there will be only one performer, myself, representing the narrator and all the characters. My goal stylistically, you may have noticed, is not really to disguise my voice or try to cartoonishly create a countless variety of voice types. That may be appropriate now and then for a few, like, striking characters that I want to do something, you know, unusual with. But for the most part, I want to tell these stories the way you might hear an excited friend passionately talk about something that they'd seen or experienced, you know, with slight vocal performance modifications and stereo mixing placement to help differentiate between characters in a scene. Apart from having a single voice represent each story and all the characters, the Storyteller Series will be like an audio drama in every other respect. As with previous Spirit Blade Productions audio projects, the world will be fleshed out by sound effects and a cinematic musical score with the goal of bringing these amazing true stories to life like you've never heard them before. Now, at the same time that I announced the upcoming launch of the Storyteller Series, I also mentioned the cancellation of the Pilgrim's Progress series that I had been intending to do until recently. We released one episode of that. That first episode in the series is going to be available for free at spiritblade.com until the launch of the Storyteller Series. And if you'd like more information about how that change came about, why I canceled Pilgrim's Progress, how I came around to the idea of the Storyteller Series, the complete video, of which I just showed a brief clip, is available on the news page over at spiritblade.com. So again, go over to spiritblade.com, click on news at the top, and you can see the video that again shows that clip that you just saw and the rest of the video as well for a deeper explanation of what's going on and what the Storyteller Series will hopefully be bringing to you guys in the near future. All right, so getting off of my own whatever, let's get into what other Christian geeks have been doing with excellence. Recently, Into the Void by Joshua A. Johnston was released. This is a sci-fi novel. It's book two in the Chronicles of Sarko series. And in case you're not familiar with the series, I'll actually just introduce you to the series. Instead of giving you the description for Into the Void, I'll read the description for the first book in that series called Edge of Oblivion. The description reads, "A forgotten past, a terminal future. Earth has emerged from a cataclysmic dark age with little knowledge of its past. Aided by the discovery of advanced alien technology, humanity ventures into the stars, joining other sentient races in a sprawling, prosperous interstellar confederacy. That peace is soon shattered. Without warning, the Confederacy comes under attack by an unstoppable alien force from the unknown regions. With hopes for civilization's survival dwindling, Commander Jared Carter is sent to pursue an unlikely lead, a collection of ancient alien religious fragments which may or may not hold the key to their salvation." So again, that series is The Chronicles of Sarko by Joshua A. Johnston. The first book in that series, Edge of Oblivion, and book two just released. Moving on now, we've got Keeper of Shadows. This is a fantasy novel by Bridget Powers. It's book one of a new series called The Light Wielder Chronicles. Again, Bridget Powers, Keeper of Shadows. The description reads, "Every shadow is proof of light. A light bearer with limited vision, a prisoner with wings. Can two cursed souls defeat the forces of darkness? Noir hates the magic that cursed his family and trapped him in the form of a raven. But to break the spell, he's willing to do anything, even if it means striking a bargain with the cruel sorceress Venefica. After agreeing to destroy the one person who threatens Venefica's dark power, he seeks out the key ingredient for a curse of life-altering pain.
Lysanne has never let diminished vision interfere with her teaching or storytelling, but when mind-numbing pain robs her of the strength to continue, some townsfolk question her usefulness to the village. Unsure where to turn, Lysanne witnesses a terrifying sight, a shadowy mist which only she can see, sending a beloved student into a frightful rage. But when she tries to warn her people of a sinister force on the prowl, the villagers cast her out into the wilds. As Lysanne struggles to survive the elements, Noir plans his deadly attack. Stalking her every move, the raven has second thoughts about ending her life, even though failure would doom his people. But every moment he delays brings Lysanne one step closer to wielding her gift of light. Can she discover her destiny before the entire realm falls to dark magic? Keeper of Shadows is the riveting first novel in the Lightwielder Chronicles, a series of inspirational fantasy novels with Christian themes. If you like life and death adventures, classic fairy tales, and clean romance, then you'll love this enchanting epic. So all that from the description of Bridget Powers' Keeper of Shadows. All right, guys, those are the only two books that I wanted to highlight for you guys this time. But if you want more, if you're interested in getting more fiction being created from a Christian worldview and with geeks in mind in the realms of sci-fi and fantasy, I want to recommend the YouTube channel of Adam Collings. That's where I get my information, well, a key source anyway of my information each month as I'm telling you guys about new books that are coming out. So, but he almost always covers more books that I don't cover in my Christian Geek Radar segment. So, if you want to kind of get all the information that really can be found out there, then the next step for you is to go and check out the YouTube channel of Adam Collings. And if you want to find out what other kind of Christian geekery of all kinds in the realms of video games and books and movies and all kinds of stuff, if you want to find out what other kind of Christian geekery is happening online and being done with the pursuit of excellence, then I invite you to come over to ChristianGeekCentral.com and hover over Portal and then just click on Gateway, and that'll take you to a place where you'll find all kinds of stuff that will pertain to your particular interests. So anyway, that's all I have for you on the Christian Geek Radar this month. Stay tuned next time for more. Thanks for watching.
Data collection complete. Activating MusaNet 1.0.
This week at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral, I've posted my video titled Slavery and Tactical Social Restraint. That's the segment looking at Ephesians from last week. Then also Geek Audio Bible and New Sci-Fi Fantasy Novels. That's the Christian Geek Radar video that went up this week. And then also, I put up the part two of my Extra Life live stream highlights, this one titled PS2 Love, NES Hate, and Comic Book Theology. And that's pretty much kind of covers the topics that I was yakking about there. And then by now, you should also be able to find my A Wrinkle in Time uncut review over on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. While you're there, if you want to like, share, or subscribe, that would be a nice way to help to grow our community. Let's see. On the Christian Geek Central Facebook and Twitter pages this week is the question, what geeky thing was, quote-unquote, so much more than you thought? I would love to hear about some geeky entertainment that you tried out, thinking you might enjoy it, but then realized at some point you not only enjoyed it, but there was so much more to enjoy than you thought in terms of available content. Maybe it's a TV show or book series that you tried out, enjoyed, and then discovered a ton of spin-offs or related products you could dive into as well. Or maybe it's a video game that you thought you'd get, 10 hours out of and then ended up getting 100 hours of fun out of it. The first thing that comes to mind for me is the original Neverwinter Nights on PC. I had trouble getting into it the first time, then tried it again a year later and got totally sucked in. And on top of that, there were so many quality user-created modules and campaigns to play through, some that were even better than the campaign included with the game. In fact, I just came back to this game recently, yet again, after a couple years away from it. Still a really great experience for me. More recently, though, it's been Monster Hunter World on the PS4, also available on Xbox One and coming to PC. At about the 35-hour mark, I hit a boss that I heard was a sort of wall to stop players that, hadn't really invested enough in taking advantage of the game's systems and gaining proficiency with a weapon. So I was kind of prepared to just kind of get destroyed and then, shrug and have to uninstall the game, simply being grateful for the hours that I did get out of it. But lo and behold, although it was challenging, I didn't really even come close to losing that fight. and have now continued on in the game. Based on the walkthrough outline I looked at, I'm only about a fourth of my way through the main campaign, after which there are even more new monsters to take on if I want. So a game I thought I might just get 20 hours out of may end up giving me close to like 140 hours of fun. I have no idea. But anyway, so what about you? What geeky bit of entertainment did you try out at some point in your life, little realizing the Pandora's box of fun it would open up for you? You can leave your 2 cents on Facebook and Twitter, or follow the link from there to our forums and join the conversation. I want to remind you guys again, this podcast is going to be rebranding and having the new title of the Christian Geek Central Podcast. We're coming up on episode number 500 of the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, and we're going to celebrate that milestone when it comes. But starting with episode number 501, although we will still continue into the 500s and beyond if God is willing, the name of the podcast will change from the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast to the Christian Geek Central Podcast. This was something I'd considered doing at the time that we first launched the Christian Geek Central website and community, but it made more sense to me at the time to keep the podcast branding consistent. Over time, though, the pros to renaming the podcast have slowly outweighed the cons, and I'm hopeful that this new name will help new listeners more easily discover both the podcast and the community behind it. Once again, the same feed will be used for the Christian Geek Central Podcast, meaning you should not have to resubscribe in order to keep getting new episodes. But beginning with episode 501, you should see that new name, new graphics, and new description for the show on podcast services. So I didn't want you to be confused as to why you have suddenly this different podcast in your feed or your content subscriber, whatever you're using to get the show. The content of the show is also going to remain unchanged, apart from some minor changes to the intro, just to rebrand the podcast. So those of you that are nervous about change, have no fear. All of the episodes of the Spirit Blade Underground podcast will remain archived and available at spiritblade.com. You just click on podcast when you get there, and you'll be able to get access to all the old episodes. If you have any questions about this change, please let me know via email at paeter@spiritblade.com, or you can bring it up on the forums at christiangeekcentral.com. I want to just have us all on the same page. If there are any questions out there, I want to make sure that those can get answered. So once again, beginning with episode 501, this podcast will be known as the Christian Geek Central Podcast going forward, but will otherwise not be significantly changed. And again, I think the new title more quickly and easily conveys the concept, so I hope you'll take advantage of that and consider telling someone about the Christian Geek Central Podcast when it launches in just a few weeks. All right. Lastly, February had plenty going on in this month's somewhat more lengthy collection of audio journal entries exclusively for Spirit Blade Insiders. I talk about my difficulty in dedicating time to prayer and worship. I talk about the annoyances of storing physical product, some brainstorming about a future Christian Geek Central community activity. I share a brief bit of panic that came along just before the Storyteller Series announcement, like the day before. I talk about the challenge of choosing tone and inflection when reading the Bible out loud. And I also talk about some signs of God moving what I would describe as kind of behind the scenes as I've prepared to select our next Bible book for study. And plus a little bit about my wonderful wife here and there along the way. And Saturday, March 17th, from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific, will be our next Google Hangout exclusively for Spirit Blade Insiders. If you sign up to be a Spirit Blade Insider before then, you can get an invite to that live video hangout with me and the other Spirit Blade Insiders. For more information about becoming a Spirit Blade Insider, you can visit our About page over at spiritblade.com. And finally, guys, I'd be grateful if you'd leave a review of our audio dramas on iTunes or Amazon. Reviews and ratings for this podcast on iTunes or other podcatchers would be great as well, and help more people discover this podcast in the Christian Geek Central community. Actually, you can wait on reviewing the podcast at this point until we get that rebranded, what do you call it? Once we rebrand, then that'd be a good time. That'd be a great time, actually, to get reviews for the podcast. So anyway, as a reminder, no, I think that's it. That's all I wanted to say. Okay, yeah. Moving on.
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Now, lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
Well, right now I'm going to attempt to examine the Bible and dissect some of the churchy language that we can often take for granted, digging into history and languages as I'm able to try and get at the heart of the text so we can hopefully see and apply at least some of what God has for us in these words today. Now, I'm not formally trained in Scripture. I'm just a guy using resources and a questioning mind to try and get at the truth, and that's something we can all do, so I hope you'll do that with me. This time we're continuing in the book of Ephesians. We've arrived at chapter 6, verses 5 through 9. We've already looked at these verses once last week just to kind of touch on the topic of slavery in general. So if you have any, if you're coming to this having not seen that, I want to recommend that you go back and look at part 1 of our look at Ephesians verses 5 through 9 of chapter 6 to just kind of get a little bit of background on what slavery was, as opposed to maybe slavery that we're more familiar with from other times and places in history. Anyway, let's go ahead and read again these verses. In the ESV, verses 5 through 9 reads, "Bondservants, obey your earthly masters with fear and trembling, with a sincere heart, as you would Christ, not by the way of eye service as people pleasers, but as bondservants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, rendering service with a good will, as to the Lord, and not to man, knowing that whatever good anyone does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether he is a bondservant or is free. Masters, do the same to them, and stop your threatening, knowing that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and that there is no partiality with him." All right, so looking at verses, 5 through 7, "Bondservants, obey your earthly masters with fear and trembling, with a sincere heart as you would Christ, not by the way of eye service as people pleasers, but as bondservants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, rendering service with a good will as to the Lord and not to man." So these are all about, like, what should our mentality be if we find ourselves as slaves in our service. As we observed last week, although slavery was not quite as terrible as what it would later become in the British Empire and in the United States, it was still never God's desire for any person to be an unwilling slave to another. Now we can leave the worthwhile, I think, Old Testament topic of slavery as indentured service to work off debt to be discussed another time. That's a little bit of a different animal there. Even so, God still had expectations for how slaves should behave toward their masters. Unintuitively, rebellion from slaves is not what is called for, but rather obedience carried out with intense reverence for their masters. Not only that, but slaves were commanded to obey with a sincere heart, as they would obey Christ if he were their master. Slaves were not to simply obey just enough to get by when their masters were watching them, and to keep their masters from being angry. They were to obey their masters out of loyalty to their true master, Jesus Christ, God himself. Eager and good-willed service toward their earthly master was a means of actually serving their ultimate master. Verse 8 now says, "Knowing that whatever good anyone does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether he is a bondservant or is free." Now, the text doesn't explain how it is that a slave could be serving Christ while doing work for a potentially corrupt master. I think in this regard, we just have to trust the sovereign plans of God, which are just going to be too varied and complex to account for in a verse or two like this. For example, I can imagine a scenario where one slave's good work may serve Christ by being an example of grace to his master and or fellow slaves. Or the results of the work itself may bring glory to God through an unseen chain of events. Or it may be that the circumstances of a slave would serve as a sort of tangible or spiritual training that will prepare them for something God has planned for them in the future. Those are just three sloppy, off-the-cuff possibilities that don't even account for the particularities of each slave's situation. We just can't know exactly what good our obedience will bring about in service to God's kingdom plans. I think we have to learn to develop a trust in the character of God and understand that it's all too complex for us, despite us maybe wanting to cry out, why is this situation a certain way? There's just complexities we're not going to be able to understand much of the time. So, but Although the text doesn't explain how a slave could be serving Christ while doing work for a potentially corrupt master, the text does indicate another type of good brought about through obedience, and that is repayment for the obedient. It says, whatever good anyone does, this he will receive back from the Lord. Now, just a quick scan of Proverbs or the Psalms makes it clear that this life can be enormously unfair. Some may live a very difficult life and die before seeing anything that looks like repayment from God for all that they have suffered or been obedient in. So what this verse seems to be pointing to is repayment for obedience that comes after this life. Now, to be clear, we're not suggesting here that our obedience in this life in any way earns eternal life. Instead, what the Bible seems to indicate in a number of places is that we will receive repayment or reward in addition to eternal life for the ways in which we are obedient in this present life. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 11 through 15 would be just one example. Looking at verse 9 now, it says, "Masters, do the same to them and stop your threatening, knowing that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and that there is no partiality with him." As with the passages from earlier in Ephesians, not long ago, relating to husbands and wives, the commands to the slave are not conditional upon the master treating them a certain way. And yet masters are commanded to treat their slaves in the same way that the slaves are commanded to treat their masters, with respect and goodwill, as though interacting with Christ. If carried out, this would mean that a master would treat his slave as an equal in terms of human value, with only an organizational place above him. There would be no abuse in their interactions, and the master would have great respect for his servants. So you can see, as we, you know, as I kind of mentioned last week, how the natural consequences of approaching these relationships in the way that the Holy Spirit is calling for will eventually lead to the end of slavery, because of the way that masters are told to think of and treat their slaves. It's following this instruction here, it's naturally going to evolve into a more employer-employee relationship rather than a slave and master relationship. So anyway, what's in all this for geeks, we might ask? It's highly unlikely that anyone listening to or watching this content is an actual slave. You know, we might make statements about how we feel about our work in terms of slavery and whatnot, but I'm talking about literal slavery. Highly unlikely that anyone listening to or watching this is an actual slave. But God's instructions to slaves and masters here would seem to have a lot of relevance and application to the relationships of employees and employers. After all, if God would be so daring as to take a situation where a person is a slave and still express expectations of them, a bar that they need to rise up to in the midst of that context, then surely he has instruction and expectation for us as believers who are not slaves, but are free employees, or not masters, but employers. So let's kind of look at it with that in mind. I think absolutely there's an application to that. As geeks, I've noticed that we often dream very big. That's certainly been true of me. I will often hear about geeks and kind of like their plans for their creative endeavors and stuff like that. A lot of us tend to dream really big. We have these ideas and plans and things we think God is going to do through our lives. And yet we can find ourselves very often stuck in a job with little to no dignity, in unfair conditions, overseen by selfish or unreasonable supervisors. We can feel like we are entirely lacking purpose in the work that we are currently doing. The truth is that God has a real purpose for us to engage in, even in those work situations that are difficult or unfair. And if we don't choose to just, as is so tempting, kind of check out mentally or just get by with doing as little as possible, if we don't do that, we'll discover an eternal reward waiting for us that will easily pay us back for the difficulty or indignity we have to suffer in our work right now. This is why we shouldn't just put our brains on autopilot or simply pump blood until we're dead. Life is worth intentionally engaging in right now and doing in God's way, because this little dot on the line of eternity, which we have to remind ourselves, that's what this is. This, compared to eternity, this is a dot. It's going to be over really fast. No matter how agonizingly slow the days seem right now, it's a dot on the line of eternity. It's going to be over, and we'll look back on it as a blink. And this little dot has opportunities that yield, despite their very temporal nature, yield eternal rewards. And I think Matthew 6, verse 20 is just one indicator of that in Scripture. Likewise, when we are supervising others in work situations, we can find purpose and obtain eternal reward through giving grace. Sometimes it's very difficult to have employees who are lazy or who are just trying to get by, you know, with the bare minimum, or just have a bad attitude, or, you know, are just doing things that are just frustrating to people that are in a supervising position. But when we find ourselves, even if we're not supervisors, if we're supervising something for a day, in even a small little way, we can find purpose and obtain eternal reward in those sometimes difficult situations through the way that we maybe give grace, give undeserved favor, or lead by example of our character. Or I didn't include this in my notes, but discipline still with compassion, you know, and that means that, you know, I mean, the two, this is something that I don't want to get on a rabbit trail here, but I think that's something that we kind of like, we can be so binary as geeks. I just noticed that in the way that we kind of talk. It's like, it's either compassion, you know, or it's, you know, saying what we think. Well, we can do both. And in the same way, we can discipline those that we are supervising, whether you're a parent or whether you are an employer. We can discipline and carry through on that discipline, saying, no, these are the consequences. This is what's going to happen now. But we can do that in a way that is still expressing our compassion and our genuine concern and our love for that person that we are disciplining. So, there are some ways where this isn't in my notes either, but there's, a guy I know at our church who, that's just how he treats his business. He runs a store that is in a part of town that kind of a somewhat rough part of town, and so the kinds of employees that he gets from the area have just been living rough lives, and they've had difficult circumstances. As a result, their character is really kind of rocky and bumpy oftentimes, and he just uses his store as a ministry. And that means that sometimes it's not always going to be the most profitable decision to hire a certain person, but he wants to give them grace and see how he can invest in their lives. And so there's just all kinds of ways, whether we're employees or employers, that we can engage intentionally in the purposes God has for us through the way that we carry ourselves in those situations and through the way that we interact and value other people in those situations, whether they are parallel to us in the organizational structure, above us, or beneath us in the organizational structure. So anyway, just to wrap up here, our dreams and purposes as geeks, I think, tend to involve being respected or well thought of. I think if we really chase those down, like, what's my measure of success? I think in the mix of that definition is something about us being respected or well thought of. And we often tend to have dreams and purposes that involve rewards that we're going to experience now in this life, in the short term. But Scripture shows repeatedly, in Christ's words and in the example of his life and how he lived his life and just allowed himself to get walked on, holy cow, we see repeatedly in Scripture and in the life of Christ that significance in God's eternal kingdom is actually born of humility lived out in this life.
Feed
feedback. Feedback, give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we have to hear from you to do that. You can send an email or audio file recorded on your phone to PAETER at spiritblade.com. And as a reminder, again, if you would like some help finding a good local church in your area, I want to help you if I can. Online resources and communities like Christian Geek Central, they're good supplements, but by nature, they can't speak to your particular situation like relationships in a local church can. The context for almost everything in the New Testament assumes that we are serving and building purposeful relationships in a local church. So whether you're in a church that just lacks Bible-based intentionality or not attending any church at all, if I can help you get connected to an authentic Bible-oriented church, I want to do that. You can email me at PAETER@spiritblade.com and we can try to look at some websites of churches in your area together. That's it, guys. Stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 400 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God allows it, I'll share my review of the movie Tomb Raider. Till then, please consider supporting the work of Christian Geek Central and Spirit Blade Productions by purchasing an audio drama, leaving a donation, or becoming a Spirit Blade Insider. You can get more information from our About page at spiritblade.com. Thank you guys so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth. Now it's time for me to get in my time machine and go see. Oh, it's Wrinkle in Time. I'm going to go see A Wrinkle in Time. So like the time machine gag, the time travel gag is even more appropriate this week than it was last time. Huh.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampson with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Coming through the wormhole.
The Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No!
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
Looking for Parmok in all the wrong places. The one of the doofiest titles in the Deep Space Nine episode, which says a lot.
Not bad.
It's a fun episode. If you remember way back in season 3 when Quark had a marriage of convenience with a Klingon woman in Groka, she comes back because she wants help with her house's finances. And so then Quark decides he wants to romance this woman, and so we have wackiness adventures, and Worf gets involved, and he's interested in her too, and, you know, Dax is along for the ride, and, you know, there's various romantic mishaps. And
it's a Klingon rom-com.
Yeah,
wrap
that's
your brain around that one.
A Klingon and Ferengi rom-com. But it is an amusing episode. It's got some enjoyable moments. It is, I believe, the first appearance of Phil Morris, who's played several great roles. If you know Seinfeld, he was the Johnny Cochran type of lawyer. If you watch Smallville, he was the guy who played Martian Manhunter, and he played several roles on Star Trek, and this was his first one. He's the Klingon who Quark ends up fighting in a Cyrano de Warfarak type way. And, you know, don't want to give all that away, but it's amusingly contrived. There's also a subplot. If you remember, Kira is living with the O'Briens because she's carrying their baby out of all these things. And O'Brien finds himself attracted to Kira, and Kira finds herself attracted to O'Brien.
And the worst part is that Keiko doesn't realize...
This is not
happening.
A good Keiko episode. This is...
And Keiko keeps trying to encourage them to spend more time with each other and be nicer to each other, not realizing how difficult this is for both of them to... not betray the marriage.
And yeah, this is a good example of that biblical concept of flee temptation. But the problem is, no one else even
Keiko keeps shoving them back into tentacles.
Yeah, and they're trying to actually be mature and right about this, and it gets convoluted because Kira and O'Brien have always, you know, at least seen eye to eye. I mean, O'Brien is one of the least Starfleet-y uptight people of all the Starfleet people. Not surprising, because he's not an officer. And Kira, obviously, is not Starfleet. So, I mean, heck, they first bonded in the premiere over their distrust of Cardassians and loathing of them. So, that's a strong foundation for a relationship.
I hate Cardies, too.
And, you know, it's actually well done. It's amusing. And this was Kim. She caught this. I did not catch this. If you remember a long time ago, or not too long ago, O'Brien was complaining because Keiko would go and have all sorts of crazy adventures and not take into account that she was pregnant.
Rappelling down cliffs to get botanical samples
while
she was pregnant with the baby.
And they acted like O'Brien was being really uptight and unfair, wanting her to not take all these risks while she was pregnant. And, you know, and we're supposed to side against O'Brien. They're like, oh, you throwback of a man and all that. But now that Keiko's not carrying the baby, she's sitting there literally saying to O'Brien, are you going to let her go off alone? Let her. So
when
apparently,
Kira is saying, no, it's okay. I'll be fine by myself. She's not even like arguing for Kira. She's arguing against Kira for the sake of the baby.
So it's almost like it's not even that she stands for or against something. It's like she almost has to stand against Miles. She's been doing good for a lot lately, but this was a big fallback episode on her being an annoying, shrill person. But that is a subplot, and O'Brien and Kira are cool in it. Not much more to say, because I don't want to give away where the story goes. There is a lasting change that comes from this episode.
Yes, there is a permanent
change
in the main crew here.
And we don't want to say who changes in what way, but This will have reverberations throughout the rest of the show, you know, all the way up into and even through season 7.
It's definitely a comic episode, but it's a fun one.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you
can let go of some silly contrivances. It's not a dignified comic episode.
No, there are a few silly contrivances. Well, and like you were talking about, the whole thing with Miles and Kira, where, you know, they like each other, they're good friends, and they start falling for each other. Which, I can't blame Kira, because Miles is pretty cute. And we learn in this episode he has magic massage powers, which...
And I gotta say, as a guy, I can't blame O'Brien, because Kira is really good looking. Women tend to just... There's something about a pregnant woman that's just very appealing to a man. She's a cool character. She's respectable. So, yeah, you can see both sides of it.
You sympathize with both of them.
And they're trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, they're both being adults. They're both trying to, as you said, flee temptation. They're both endeavoring to not betray their respective relationships. And
yeah, when you start to see, and that's what they acknowledge too, is like, you know, in another time, another place, this would have been a good relationship. And it would have been. They would have been a fine couple. But O'Brien had been married before Deep Space Nine was ever conceived, so that wasn't going to be happening unless they were going to ditch Keiko out of an airlock, which at times I would disagree with. not this episode.
You shouldn't murder Keiko.
In principle, yes. But yeah.
That would be wrong.
Not too much to say about this. Just enjoy it for what it is, and we'll see you next time for a much more serious but another good episode of Deep Space Nine, as rare as they are to have a good episode. See you then.